Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the greatest state in the greatest country on the second greatest planet in the solar system. It's episode number 19 of Midday with Trey and BK. I am Trey Elling. I make the Chicago Bulls front office management look competent. And behind the glass today is the Greek god of production. He is Zach with an H, Christo. Zach, how's it going?
I'm doing all right, man. Did you know that you used to live in Chicago?
I did used to live in Chicago, and I actually have the numbers for a lot of the front office guys. I think I have Fred Hoiberg's number as well. Maybe we'll try and crank call them today as part of the show. And the one Jew in a sea of Gentiles here at the Horn, the still ailing but playing hurt sports radio prodigy himself, Brad Kellner.
Everybody on? Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
I mean, the dead ball era was kind of cool, huh? Nobody ever talks about the dead ball era. It's all this chutzpah about the live ball era. Come on, man.
No yelling on the bus!
You're laboring, but you're here. How you feeling, buddy?
Yeah, sorry about yesterday, Trey. I've been fighting against this sickness for a couple days, and I think I need a 2-4 beer, some coffee from Timmy Hortons, eh?
What's up with the Canadian accent?
Is he of the Canadian flu?
Oh, is that what this is?
Uh-oh. Nah, boys. It's draft day. NHL draft day. Happy draft day to all of you out there.
Boy, he is under the weather right now. Yeah. Not that he doesn't care about hockey, but he thinks that you and I may actually care even the slightest bit about this.
I'm just glad that you guys were able to pick up that was a Canadian accent, because I had no idea where I was going with that.
I mean, that's the only one that has the aboot
in it, so that was what
gave it away.
So we're fighting against. All the hockey announcers say against instead of against.
Do they?
Uh-huh.
All right.
And Timmy Hortons, eh?
Tim Hortons.
That's like the Starbucks up there. It's like their big coffee and donut shop that they... All right, I'm done.
The only reason I know that is from How I Met Your Mother, right? They mentioned that in that show.
They do.
Yeah,
that's
the only reason why I know that.
Somehow that's a show that I watch from start to finish. I'm not entirely sure why.
There's no somehow about that. I think that's a good show. I didn't start that in season one, but my wife was a fan, so when she and I started dating, inevitably you end up watching repeats of certain shows, and that was one of those that we watched repeats of and enjoyed immensely together, more than I thought I would, because the show... It has a cheesy element about it, but it's done well enough that there's still a lot of humor.
Yeah, I didn't find myself really loving the show, but something about it, I think just a lot of my friends in middle school and high school were watching it over the years, and just something to talk about with all those people. But by the time I was done, I was like, well, that's it. I mean, the ending kind of sucked. This isn't that good of a show. Mom dies after like three episodes.
Oh, man.
Spoiler
I was
going
to say,
alert.
To this day, I don't think I've ever seen the finale. I kind of lost interest in it, but...
I forgot. I always do this thing where I say the spoiler and then say spoiler alert afterwards.
Which it was kind of infuriating.
It doesn't do anybody any good, so I'm sorry about that.
You mentioned the lack of enthusiasm at the end of How I Met Your Mother, mm-hmm. and I agree with that. I think the ending was a little bit hokey. As a matter of fact, the last season or two, quite frankly, jumped the shark. Yeah, I just said quite frankly, drink up.
Oh,
but that's also the same way that I felt at the end of the NBA draft last night, too. Barring the one major trade that occurred, that the instrumental piece in the trade apparently found out from Europe at 2 a.m., the rest of the draft was fairly ho-hum. Even the staunchest supporters of the NBA draft were saying throughout the night, man, this is normally much more wild than it is right now. Things are kind of going as they were expected to.
Yeah, no, not a whole lot of surprises. And I'll be honest, I love watching the NBA draft. I'm one of those guys who sticks around from pick 1 to pick 60 year after year after year. But last night, I'll be honest, after Jared Allen got picked 22 to the Brooklyn Nets, it was bedtime. Pop that ZZZ-quil, that super strength, severe stuff. And
You didn't need that, though. You're under the weather right now. You can just go to sleep, right?
Well, I can go to sleep any place, any time. I was just hoping it helped the symptoms a little bit. And I'm still waking up feeling like trash. But, I'm able to sleep through whatever sickness I have. I've been lucky enough to not have anything serious enough to where I couldn't sleep. But, man, by the time I woke up, that stuff had worn off, and I've been popping 3 or 4 Advil at a time, which I think the recommended dose is like 1 every 6 hours.
It's not one. You can do up to 800 milligrams, and 4 equals the 800 in most cases.
Cool. So we've been okay. So NBA draft, second round, I only like because the deputy commissioner comes in for the second round, right? Adam Silver announces all the first-round picks, and the deputy commissioner comes in. I love that dude. I'm not entirely sure why, but he gets a huge standing ovation every time he comes off to the stage.
It's because it's not the commish. It was the same thing when Adam Silver was replacing David Stern in the second round a couple years ago.
People don't hate David, or people don't hate Adam Silver. They hate David Stern. People didn't boo Adam Silver.
He was getting booed.
The only times he got booed, I thought, was when he was talking about Golden State winning the NBA Finals.
That happened as well.
Was he getting ripped?
At the very beginning, anyhow. I was watching a good chunk of the first round, anyhow. I tuned out before the second round.
That's fair.
But I was watching a good chunk of the first round with the sound down because I was dealing with a couple of other things while that was going on, including family duties. Mm. But at least at the very beginning, he was getting booed heavily. But I mean, how serious do you take that in places like New York or Philadelphia, where in those situations, they just love booing in general?
Yeah.
It's obnoxious more than anything
You're
else.
You're absolutely right. And at least the NBA draft, there wasn't a commercial in between every single pick like there was for the NFL draft. You remember that? I mean, my goodness, it got to the point where middle of the first round of the NFL, there was a pick and then a commercial break, then a pick. It was ridiculous. NBA at least got, you know, 4 or 5 picks in before a commercial, so it was a little bit more enjoyable to watch.
I actually hate the NFL draft for that reason. I have a hard time watching it. I'll either, years that I have a DVR, I'll DVR it and go back and watch later to blow through. Because the draft itself, it represents what watching individual NFL games is. It's kickoff, commercial break. Series, commercial break. If they score a touchdown, you get another kickoff, then a commercial break. It feels like it takes forever for those games to happen because there are so many commercial breaks, to the point that Roger Goodell and league management has scaled back the number of commercial breaks that they're having each quarter now. And that's a great idea for them. It still doesn't replace the Red Zone, which is the greatest channel on TV in the fall.
Red Zone is unbelievable. That is God's gift to man. But you're right, Trey. I mean, the NBA draft, by the way, I wish college football would take some notes on that. Can we get a running clock, please, in college football for the love of everything?
Yeah.
I mean, can we stopping the clock after first downs, please? At least make that like a final 2 minute thing of the end of the half and the fourth quarter.
They keep the clock moving until it gets, I think, to the final 4 minutes of each half.
First down, they stop the clock until they move the sticks.
No, they do, but the clock still continues to go. I like the college rule.
Oh, dude, the games take 4.5, 5 hours. It's absurd.
They take that long for different reasons. The clock's stopping to reset the ball. I wish the NFL would institute that because your officials have to get reset in that instance. So even if you're up to the line of scrimmage, until everybody is ready, there's no way that you can actually snap the football. I think it makes rational sense to do it the college way.
That's a debate for another time. But man, you're talking commercials, college football. You get hundreds of those over the course of a 4.5 hour game. But you're right, Trey. The NBA draft last night, we had some fireworks early on with that Jimmy Butler trade, getting traded to Minnesota, reuniting with head coach Tom Thibodeau, who of course was with the Bulls for a while. The heyday of this most recent Bulls era. Now, you know, not heyday based off what Bulls fans want and what they expect over the last 20, 25 years or so. But Jimmy Butler gets traded, as you mentioned, found out while he was in Paris at about 2 a.m. local time. Didn't have anything to comment on the trade. In return, the Bulls get Zach LaVine. I'm not sure if he's Jewish. LaVine is a very Jewish name. Doesn't look very Jewish, though, and his athletic ability does not follow the whole white man or Jews can't jump mantra. I also get Chris Dunn, who was a top 5 pick by Minnesota last year, who apparently the Bulls were coveting in last year's draft, and the draft rights to Lauri Markkanen, the 7-footer out of Arizona. So that was the big trade, right? People were excited, and then you hear names. Maybe Kristaps Porzingis is going to be dealt. Maybe Paul George is going to be dealt. Maybe LaMarcus Aldridge, concerning a lot of Spurs fans. Reports yesterday the Spurs were trying to get back into the top 10, dangling Aldridge a little bit, but you're right. None of that stuff happened and ended up being a pretty standard draft. No huge surprises. The normal pick-for-pick type trades, but outside of the Jimmy Butler deal, relatively ordinary television.
Yeah, and as much as people want to blow up the NBA offseason, this is what pretty much every offseason is. It's a bunch of rumor mongering with very little substance coming out on the other side. And that's what so much of this has been these last 3 days. You're hearing all these different big names that could end up here, could end up here. I mean, we heard Derrick Rose to San Antonio in the last couple of days.
Is that a big name anymore, Derrick Rose?
It's not as big of a name, but that just goes to show you how gullible people are, myself included. I reacted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what in the hell would the Spurs do with Derrick Rose? Greg Popovich is smarter than that. He doesn't bring those types of guys to his team typically. Marcus Aldridge being a slight exception in terms of guys who don't necessarily have it down the stretch in big games. But Jimmy Butler. That's it. Jimmy Butler was one of the names that was thrown out, mm-hmm. going possibly to different places, Cleveland, Boston, ends up in Minnesota with Thibodeau. But I'm having a hard time being really excited for the rest of the NBA offseason. I know free agency is going to be something different. There aren't a ton of big names out there right now that are going to be changing teams. But in the end, one Texas Longhorn is drafted. It is Jared Allen. He goes a little bit later than where people were anticipating. You and I were in contact via text message yesterday. We considered a bet. I never got to it on the air, though. Fortunately for you, yep. I didn't, because you had him going either 17 or 19. He ends up falling to 22nd to Brooklyn. And a lot of people, not just Texas fans, but a lot of people in general, consider that to be a good value pick for the Nets.
Absolutely. I mean, anytime a guy's projected to go, you were seeing Jared Allen mentioned at pick number 13. So falling way behind that, it's definitely a good value pick for the Nets. Jared Allen has a lot of upside. He had his little post-draft interview with Allison Williams or whoever the ESPN chick was. She was running out of questions by that point. But she asked Jared Allen, you know, what do you think your role is going to be at the next level? And he answered it in like 4 seconds. He's just like, rim protector and a guy who could switch to smalls off of pick and rolls. Like, if I'm a Nets fan who's never seen Jared Allen play because Texas sucked last year and didn't make the NCAA tournament, didn't have a whole lot of nationally televised games, I'm hearing that and I'm like, well, this sucks. We just drafted a dude who thinks his job at the next level is to switch on pick and rolls. Jared Allen, though, he's not much of a talker. I'm not going to knock him for that. And Aaron was talking about this morning, Trey. The Nets are a G League now, a D League, G League mm-hmm. team. They're terrible. They won 20 games last year. They got hot at the end of the season to even get to 20 wins. They're terrible. They've got more picks given to the Celtics over the next couple years. They just traded their best player in Brook Lopez to the LA Lakers. They have nothing. So it's pretty much a D-League team, but Jared Allen's going to be cashing NBA checks, which you've got the standpoint of, well, you kind of wish when you're drafted pick 22, that's generally a playoff team, so you're going to sit on the bench for a while, maybe be in the actual D-League and learn in a good organization. In Brooklyn's case, Jared Allen's going to get plenty of playing time in year one, which, you know, he's going to be behind Timofey Mozgov is the assumption who is in that Lopez deal. But Jared Allen should get plenty of PT in year one for the Nets, and he'll have a chance to prove his worth right away, get practice against actual NBA players. So down the road could be a good fit. As bad as the Nets are, look, they're not going to win for as long as Jared Allen's there unless he spends his whole career there. But in terms of getting on the floor, actually, this is a good situation for J.A.
I was surprised to hear the most common critique from Jared Allen, and maybe it is from just reading his body language, hearing how soft-spoken he can be, and that is, and it, oftentimes it was coming from guys whose job it was to watch him play last year, and that is, does he love the game of basketball? As somebody who watched a lot of Longhorn hoops last season and saw him at the beginning of the year versus where he was at the end of the year, and it really started to kick into a higher gear in conference play, the guy loves playing basketball, and he has a toughness about him that I think was underappreciated by college basketball types last year. I have no issues with whether or not he loves playing the game of basketball. I believe he does. It's whether or not he is ready to play heavy minutes, which he may be relied upon starting next season, mm-hmm. versus a guy who can sit back, play minutes here and there. I mean, you know, he's playing consistently from game to game, but he's not having to play between 20 and 30 minutes. It's something in the 10 to 15 or 15 to 20 minute range. Mm-hmm. He's going to be playing heavier minutes next year. He's going to be relied upon, and that speaks to what you're talking about the Brooklyn Nets needing to be on some AAA level of the NBA.
They need to be relegated to use a soccer term. I see you, Zach, back there.
I love that system, by the way. I wish every professional sport in America would do that, to where if you suck, I don't know if it sucked for a consecutive years, or you just suck 1 year, you get knocked down a peg to the lower league. And if you're one of the best in that lower league, you get moved up to the highest league.
What, are you going to put the Rio Grande Valley Vipers in the league over the Brooklyn Nets?
Look, every NBA team just about now has a G League team. I think 27 mm-hmm. have their own G League teams now.
I think they all do they not? I think isn't it like a requirement? You have to have a development league team?
I had seen the other day that it was up to 27 now. Maybe that was an older article.
Yeah, you could be right.
But I think eventually, assuming that you get these teams into the right sorts of markets, that you move them into, I hate to call them secondary markets, because the NBA has teams in a lot of different cities that I don't consider to be major towns. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee, sorry, Cleveland folks, but Cleveland qualifies as that. There are a number of cities that just don't have huge populace that very easily could be switched out for with a Pittsburgh, with an Austin. I know we don't necessarily want a fourth NBA team in the state of Texas.
Right.
But there are cities that are possibilities to replace lesser NBA franchises, especially if they're in a big town but people aren't going to the games.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you talk about Seattle, maybe getting a team back, or a team like Kansas City, bringing Vancouver Grizzlies back from Memphis, bring
sure.
those guys back. But that'd be interesting. I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No,
but
it's not. It's total theory.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Before Jared Allen, like you said, I agree with you. I mean, the dude definitely loves playing the game, just doesn't show a whole lot of emotion, Trey. And it's weird because, look, you saw plenty of emotion from Jared Allen during big plays, that huge dunk he had over Kanate on West Virginia that, you know, they showed a bunch last night where Fran Fraschilla was calling it
dunk of the year.
That was the one highlight they showed for him. Yeah, that's pretty much, well, when you win 11 games, there's not a whole lot they do in terms of digging. But now Jared Allen does show emotion. You can tell he enjoys playing the game. And it's just funny, Trey, because that's something you hear with players like Jared Allen who have a calm demeanor on the floor. I mean, there are so many egotistical, showboating-like players in this sport nowadays that when you finally have a player who is not like that, you question stuff. Does he even want to play the game? Which is ridiculous. Dude's been playing in his whole life. This is a lifelong dream. Got drafted in the first round. How can you say he doesn't want to play the game? And, you know, he was fighting till the last second of every game last year on an 11-22 basketball team, questioning his desire and heart. You know, that's like you said, that seems like people who don't know what they're talking about, and the dudes who get paid to do this stuff, they should do a little bit more research on that.
You know, a gripe I'd like to hear more than does he care about the game, if he's a calmer demeanor like that, does he respect the game enough to play it the right way? With guys like Grayson Allen, I don't even hate to bring that name up, that piece of crap is responsible for tripping a number of individuals. He walks through other teams' huddles, shouldering guys. Like, he is a disrespectful individual who, quite frankly, drink up. If that was happening on a pickup basketball court, he's dealt with. That attitude, that behavior is beaten out of you if you want to sit there and be disrespectful to other guys.
Yeah.
Jared Allen plays the game the right way. He plays it respectfully. When you piss him off, like teams tried to do last year in the Big 12 especially, he responds in a way that not a lot of people realize. He doesn't go further into a shell. He comes out of that, and he ends up dunking on dudes like he did in the West Virginia game.
No doubt, and I think he's a dude who's expected to progress as he gets older. I mean, you saw the progression from game 1 to game 31 in this Texas season. I mean, he was the only thing as a Texas basketball fan where you could point to and say, this has gotten better from game 1 to the last game of the season. Everything else, the coaching, the other players, the team shooting, I mean, everything else looked terrible the entire season. Jared Allen was able to progress, and now he's gone. So, look, good value pick for the Nets, and I think a good opportunity. Look, Brooklyn's a cool place to live. Happy for Jared Allen, a chance to expand his horizons as a human being as well, and a real smart guy. I think he'll do well in terms of, you know, managing his money and just living his life up there as a single guy in NYC.
Shifting over to the Texas teams now, I'm going to rely on you for a lot of this, Brad, because
sure.
You watched a ton more college basketball than I did last year. I've read a little bit on these guys, but you know far more than I do, so I'm firing questions your way now. Vice Sports, before the draft last night, said Dennis Smith will go down as having been the best player from this 2017 draft. A lot of mocks had him going to the Mavericks at 9. That's where he ends up, the point guard out of NC State. What are your thoughts on Dennis Smith?
I'm really excited about this pick. Really, really excited. The dude has explosive athleticism. He can get to the 10 at will. And people forget, he played his freshman year at NC State, where he was named ACC Freshman of the Year in the best conference in college basketball. He tore his ACL like a little bit before
his senior year in high school.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So the dude didn't even have 100% of his explosiveness back, but he's shifty with the ball in his hands, tremendous burst to the cup, a great passing ability as well. Got to be more consistent with the jump shot, but he's not a bad jump shooter. Some people out there says that's a weakness to his game. I wouldn't quite call it a weakness. He improved a lot over the course of his lone year with Mark Godfrey at NC State. The biggest question mark for Dennis Smith Jr. is almost similar to Jared Allen, but this is more about his attitude in taking plays off with Dennis Smith. People thought, dude, this dude has all the ability in the world. His numbers almost should have been better. People were questioning that in his high school days and his one year at NC State. Does he focus all the time? Is his desire to win, desire to make things happen every possession, is that there? I think Rick Carlisle is a perfect coach because he's not going to stand for any of that type of stuff. I think he's a great coach for Dennis Smith to learn from. And the Mavs, who were rumored to be looking for trading for Ricky Rubio a couple days ago with the T-Wolves, who were rumored to be looking for somebody in free agency in terms of the point guard spot. They hope they just locked up their guy for the future who can play behind the Yogi Ferrell-Seth Curry combination in year one, but get plenty of playing time and maybe by the end of the season be a starter for Dallas for years to come.
The first thing I look at when I'm seeing a point guard prospect is not only how his team did in the season before he's drafted, but also if it was an improvement from the previous year. It's why I believe, having watched limited tape of Markelle Fultz, that I think he's going to end up being a bust in the NBA.
Really?
Sorry. You got a guy who was a point guard on a 9-win Washington Huskies team. That's a huge red flag for me.
It's interesting because the 76ers are banking on him.
Yeah.
Markelle Fultz on a 9-win Washington team. And Ben Simmons, of course, the number one pick from last year who didn't play a minute. He was like a 15-win tournament-missing LSU team.
Agreed. I think that's a loser quality that you especially don't want in either a high-round draft pick, but point guards included.
Mm-hmm.
And with Dennis Smith, now his NC State team wasn't quite as bad last year. I think they were a game or two below 500. But it wasn't much. It was actually a slight decrease from the previous year with Mark Gottfried and his NC State team. And so that is a cause for a little bit of concern for me with Dennis Smith. I hadn't even read much about him taking plays off here and there. Perhaps that's a byproduct of him still recovering from a knee injury, him trying to get his basketball conditioning off.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as you want to say, look, a guy's playing two games a week, he's playing consistently, they're practicing all the time, it still takes a long time to get back into sports playing shape if you took a year off like he had to for that knee injury.
No doubt about it. And NC State was just a really cancerous environment last year, because for the entire last month of the season, there was a rumor that Mark Gottfried was going to be fired, like with a month to go, and then it was like, all right, he's probably going to be fired. Then it became, oh, he's going to be fired, but we're going to let him coach out the rest of the year. That is a problem. That's a really bad atmosphere and environment to be around. But, boy, Dennis Smith, I mean, I'm excited seeing what all these experts, and look, when you're picked in the top 10, everyone's going to hype you up. Nobody wants to go like what you did, Trey, and that's why I like you, man. We have hot takes on this show. No one's going to go out there and say this dude's going to be a bust, because if they're wrong, they look like an idiot, right? No one's going to say Jamarcus Russell was going to be a bust. Look what happened to him. Nobody said Greg Oden was going to be a bust and injuries could ruin his entire career. Look what happened to him.
Anthony Bennett, there's a long list of guys.
Anthony Bennett was an obvious bust to me. So Dennis Smith, excited about that. For the Spurs, look, the Rockets only had one pick in the second round. We can talk about him later, the German Isaiah Hartenstein or whatever the heck it is. And then the Spurs had two picks. We'll get to their number 29 pick, Derek White out of Colorado, who's a fifth-year senior, which... Whoa, a fifth-year senior in the NBA draft nowadays? That is hard to believe. I don't want to call him Slow-Mo, like Kyle Anderson, who's nicknamed Slow-Mo on the Spurs, who the Spurs took in the first round out of UCLA a couple years ago. But he does play the game a little bit slower, really high basketball IQ, just a solid all-around player with good experience, can play either guard position. He's listed as the point guard, but he's 6'5", 6'6", so he's effective, and he can shoot the mid-range game, which is a lost art. I think something Pop likes. High basketball IQ, good passer, and can score at all three levels. I think he's a solid pick.
Fitting that the Spurs take a guy who was a senior his final year in college, and I am seeing a number of people project him as more of a shooting guard type than a point guard with the Spurs.
And with the Spurs, I mean, you know, you guys know I'm a Mavs fan. With the Spurs, every single pick that they have scares the you-know-what out of me.
Oh, you have to treat it with respect.
Because they strike gold, of course, because they're so successful every year. They pick in the late 20s seemingly time and time again. And every single pick they have, I mean, you look at DeJounte Murray, the kind of postseason he had, picked with the same spot, number 29 last year out of Washington. He already looks like maybe a solid point guard for the future. Nah, distant future. He's still 20, 21 years old for San Antonio. But, I mean, look, the Spurs development team and their front office deserve so much credit for what they turned these guys into. They got a smart player in Derek White. And then their second-round pick, Jaren Blossingame, who they got really late, the 59th pick, second-to-last pick in the draft. That dude was a stud at Clemson. He put Clemson on the bubble in college basketball, which is hard to do. I don't know if his game's going to translate too much to the NBA. He's a little bit slower, you know, but he found ways to score in college, and if he can find somehow translate that into a 3-and-D type guy at the next level, then that could be a nice hidden gem found late second round for San Antonio. All right, there's some NBA draft. Hopefully we didn't drive too many of you away from the radio, but hey, it's like the one sports story we have today. So when we come back, we will have some Tinder time. Our man Zach, see you behind the glass. Will ask us some questions for the rest of the show. The Schwitz coming up at 11:45, our version of the Blitz. We've got a guest from Vice Sports, Patrick Ruby, coming on at 12:05.
Is it Ruby or Hruby?
Hruby.
Hruby. We're going to have to ask him that first.
Are you trying to do like a CH, like a Jewish thing? Like the Old Testament?
Chutzpah.
Hruby. And then we'll shoot the bull, of course, at 12:30, and we'll have some more fun. It is a Friday. We'll talk about our weekend plans as well. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Midday with Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
Back on Midday with Trey and BK. Zach, what are you playing for us
today? A little bit
today?
Of Itana today, this morning.
Shohei Ohtani, Japanese prodigy in baseball?
No, not that.
Oh, sorry.
And what's the reason why we're playing this?
She has a show tonight on E6 at Flamingo Cantina. I dig this, man. This is kind of cool.
Has a little bit of a reggaeton sound to it.
Yeah, the Chronicle describes her as Jamaican reggae songstress, Etana. So,
yeah, it sounds a little Jamaican-y.
I like that.
What's nice. What language is this? Oh, that's English.
That's English, I was going to say.
I was like, wow, okay? I must be mishearing something if he's asking that question.
I've been thinking all Canadians, not Jamaicans today, man. Oh, no.
Folks, just so you know, my friend here is still a little bit under the weather. We're receiving text messages right now on the Specs text line, 337-3776. People insinuating that you contracted something from your usage of the Fleshlight a couple days ago, that being master of your own domain is something that can lower energy levels in your immune system and leave you susceptible to illness. It's none of those things. You just contracted a little bit of a bug.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't even gotten to use the Fleshlight yet because I don't want to use it when I'm actually sick. You know, I got to make sure I'm healthy. I don't want to be putting all kinds of germs. Now, I do have the flesh washed, which will clean out any germs that are going to be in there. But no, that ain't true. That ain't true. I promise that has nothing to do with it.
That ain't true.
I think I know what it is, though, Trey.
What?
Dude, it has been about 3 weeks, give or take a day or two.
Since you had fast food.
Since I've eaten fast food. And that is very unique. I mean, I usually don't go 3 days without eating fast food. So now most people would say, all right, well, you know, you're not eating fast food. That should be good for you. That should be healthy. You're eating a little bit better. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say I haven't had my fair share of burgers and frozen pizzas and stuff that's just about as healthy as fast food.
Dude, that's fast food.
Okay, well, no, it's not from a fast food place. It ain't fast food.
The but pizza, it's food that you're, sorry, I just spit on you. It's food that you're, it's food that you're zapping in a microwave.
No, the frozen pizza's in an oven. It takes like 20 minutes to cook. Okay. That's not very fast for me. I'm like using the George Foreman to cook some burgers. It takes like, you know, 5 minutes or so to get that whole bad boy done. I'm throwing on like a fried egg in there, a little bit of bacon, whatever. We're making things happen.
And the Foreman?
No, that's okay. Going in the skillet.
Okay.
over the open fire.
A little bit of cooking skill there, man.
Well, I got some things. I got some things that I like to do in the kitchen that doesn't take any skill.
What do you do with the egg?
I fry it.
Well, I mean, what are you doing though? Sunny side up? Are you going over easy, over medium?
I mix it up. Ooh, there's an over medium.
Over medium is supposed to be the standard in the culinary world.
Oh, so I just, you know, I put a little butter on the pan. There it is. And I crack open the egg over there, let one side, let one side cook, and then I'll flip it over and let the other side cook. That's a fried egg, no?
It is a fried egg, but how well are you cooking it? Is the yolk still a little bit running?
Yeah, a little bit. Like if you were to cut inside, the yolk would run a tad.
So the yolk is starting to firm up a little bit.
Sure. Uh-huh. Is that good? Is that bad?
I like really runny yolk, but if you're going over medium, so you're doing what the standard is.
All right, and there you go. And I got a crock pot from someone in our sales team. I don't know how to use that. They say all I got to do is put something in the morning and then just turn it on low and then you're good. It'll just be ready for dinner time.
I've got a great pork butt recipe that I can give to you.
I was going
to
say, but I don't want to do a whole bunch of stuff, man. Like, I don't want to be, because I wake up early. I don't want to be at 4:30 in the morning, like, putting a bunch of stuff, opening a bunch of ingredients and marinating and putting sugars and spices and all that stuff on food.
Well, what you do with the pork butt recipe anyhow is most of the prep is done the night before, so you're supposed to brown the outsides, and then you let it sit in the juices that it will eventually be cooking in the next day, and you just let that happen overnight. It's a very simple process.
See, I don't think that far in advance for when I cook. Like, that's why I like fast food so much. I get hungry. I want to eat right now. Whenever I actually do cook something that takes more than 10 minutes, I'm noshing on chips and salsa or Doritos so much that by the time my food is ready, I'm not even hungry anymore. That's my problem. I don't know how to cook. I don't know how to chef, man.
Back to the Specs text line. Law Office John says, I'm glad Jarrett Allen went in the first round, but do y'all think he was disappointed for being picked by the Nets and out of the lottery? It's a humbling experience to finally be chosen, is what he said in his post-draft pick interview. Somebody else says that you could read his lips that when he was chosen, he said something to the effect of finally. I don't necessarily disagree with those things. Brooklyn, especially hearing you talk about them, seems like a pretty terrible franchise to go to. I know you may be around Jay-Z here or there with him sitting on the sidelines and co-owning the team. But other than that, losing sucks. I don't care what the sport is. A certain amount of losing is character building. Too much losing, though, is just not fun.
Yeah, Jared Allen got a little taste of that last year. 11 wins at UT in 33 games. He might have 11 wins in 82 games next year. But you're right. I mean, Jared Allen at pick number 22 and Malik Monk probably at pick 11 were a couple of dudes who slipped a lot lower than mock drafts had them going in the first round. So yeah, Jared Allen was one of the bigger slippers. I don't know if you want to call him a loser. He's still a first round pick in the NBA. I don't think he regrets leaving it at all, and leaving college at all. And I don't think UT fans should be upset with that because it helped land Mo Bamba, who was projected to be a top 5 pick. You were telling me before the show in a ridiculously too early 2018 mock draft deal. So I think it'll work out in the long run for Jared Allen. Yeah, he misses out on a little bit of money, and I'm sure he would prefer to be a lottery pick, no doubt. But does he have any regrets on leaving for the NBA? I wouldn't imagine so.
Westworld Jerry says, hey, BK, give us a quick rundown on Hoosiers. That's going to happen. It's going to happen at 11:45. We did want to get his thoughts, even though we reviewed it and spoke with the writer, Angelo Pizzo, about that script yesterday. We are still going to get BK's thoughts here in about 10 minutes or so. Hair of the Dog says, could you guys talk about your personal lives or something else? The NBA makes me want to jump off of a bridge. I agree with that. Chris Bennett, CB, he asks whether you're having a fast food withdrawal right now. That's always possible.
That's got to be it. Like, I don't feel well. I just want to go home. My mom was nice enough to send me some soup from one of these, like, food delivery service orders. So that's the stuff I should be eating. But part of me thinks it's just fast food withdrawals, man. I need to just get some Taco Bell. They've got that new double chalupa in there, which if the romper comes in, that could be something you're going to get to try, the double chalupa. It's got the seasoned beef, the cheese, the nacho cheese, the lettuce, the sour cream, just loaded in a ridiculously looking shell. Comes in a cool box. I was watching some food reviews before the show on YouTube.
I was listening to those reviews.
Pretty weird. Pretty interesting stuff. Maybe that's a part of it. Maybe I just need some fast food and I'll be good to go.
I can speak from personal experience that when you cut certain things out of your diet, whether it is things that are really good for you or things that are really bad for you, your body does go through withdrawal on a lot of ingredients. The big one for me is sugars and carbs. Whenever I go hardcore with my diet and I cut those things down to a minimum, it does feel like you have the flu for a couple days.
Oof, you know what I ate this morning, by the way?
What?
This is going to be nasty. You know how on Wednesday, Rudy's comes in and brings us a bunch of breakfast tacos?
Yeah.
And if we do have leftovers, our man Earl just puts them in the fridge.
No.
Yeah, had one during B&E this morning.
Gross,
two
man.
Days old. It's bean and cheese. No
All
eggs.
All right, let's get to Tinder time. Every day at about this moment in the show, 11:30 or so, we do the radio version of the popular dating app, Tinder. Of course, the point of the dating app is you look at pictures of the opposite sex. If you are interested in finding out more about that person or perhaps contacting them, you swipe right. If you want nothing to do with that person after you see that initial picture, you swipe left. We do the same thing, but with radio. So our great producer, Zach, reads us sports headlines. We swipe right if we want to find out more and talk about it, or left if we want nothing to do with that particular item. What's up first today, Zach?
All right, guys. Up first, is the number one overall pick the number one overvalued thing in all of sports?
Is that a headline you're asking us about?
It's a headline and a question. It's both.
I mean, there's a pretty strong history of number one picks being the best players in their sport. I mean, guys like Kareem, guys like LeBron. I mean, Michael Jordan was the number three overall pick, so you got examples of that in all sports. I mean, Mike Trout, the best player this generation in baseball, was picked 27. There's been plenty of busts in the NFL at pick number one and in all sports, but I don't think it's overvalued. I think, for the most part, number one picks turn out to be the most likely to succeed in each draft class.
I'm going to swipe right with the answer of yes, they are overrated.
All right, I'll swipe left, but I want to hear what you got back there.
They're just talking about how all of these teams that are super teams are being created with players that weren't necessarily the number one pick.
Interesting. Well, let's see. I mean, you look at the Golden State Warriors. KD was the number two pick, of course, behind Greg Oden. Steph Curry was number seven. Klay was 10 or 11, and Draymond was number 33. So if you're looking at Golden State, if you go to Cleveland, Kyrie was number one, LeBron James was number one. So, look, Golden State is a whole other animal, a super team. But if you look at some of the super teams in history, then it's usually guys drafted in the top two or three that are the best.
I was about to say, I think the crucial thing is maybe top five or top ten. But yeah, sure, the number one overall pick can be overrated. There are plenty of examples of guys who were supposedly can't miss that ended up being busts. So number one pick can be superstars along the lines of LeBron James. It could be the Anthony Bennett types of the world.
Michael Olajuwon.
Candyman.
The Candyman can. All right, Zach, see what we got next, brother.
All right, guys. Derek Carr signed a contract with the Raiders, making him the highest paid NFL player.
Swipe right.
Yeah, swipe right. I enjoy these details.
I got to throw in a bit of a brag at soccer here. It is nowhere near the level of pay that some of these European soccer players get, with the European soccer players making sometimes upwards of $300,000 a week.
They don't do anything. What do? They just walk around for 90 minutes.
Well,
big soccer players, have you done?
This 5-year extension.
They'll just avoid all their taxes anyways. It doesn't matter.
Flop around on the grass.
They don't
like
even
fish
use their
water.
Money. Yeah.
All right. All right. Let me get through the stats of the story.
Yeah, sorry.
Come
you brought
on.
Up soccer. I got to trash it today.
I blame myself. 5-year contract extension worth $125 million. So,
Trey, Derek Carr is now the highest paid player in the history of the NFL. What do you think about that?
You got to pay quarterbacks that you have faith in. Derek Carr has given the Raiders franchise a lot of reasons to think that he could be the future. He's been in the league for what now? 3 years? 2 years? 3 years?
This will be year three, I believe.
Yeah, and he's already done, I think, well enough to merit a big payday, and they've given him that to ensure that they get to keep him around for a lot longer. Boy, Oakland is one of those teams that I'm keeping a close eye on in the preseason and the start of the year as well. They could do some big things in 2017.
No doubt about it. The future Las Vegas Raiders, and it'll be year four for Derek Carr. But, man, I know it's how it works. It's why Mike Conley was the highest paid player in the NBA. You just got to set the bar for other people to beat it. Derek Carr, 15th in the NFL in completion percentage last year, 16th in QBR. I know he led the Raiders to a really good season. If he didn't get hurt, they might have been to the AFC Championship game. But, man, it's just weird to think about that he is the highest paid player in the history of this league.
You have a point on that, but as crucial for statistics for a quarterback is the win-loss record that he leads his team on.
That's true.
Jay Cutler put up plenty of I won't even say he put up plenty of good stats, but he had decent stat years where his teams were doing jack squat. So there always is the other side of that coin. And Derek Carr for Raiders fans right now falls on the side of it. Looks like he has potential to be that team leader from the quarterback position that can elevate the squad to different places.
Got to pay your quarterback. Zach, you got anything else for us, man?
Do you guys want to talk about poop doping? Not to get gross. I mean, I probably should have put a warning on that.
Let's hold off on that one. Let's make that story number one on Monday because I do want to swipe right on that. Oof. But we do need to hit a commercial break so BK can
poop doping?
Review Hoosiers before we hit the schvitz. So we'll hold off on that one until Monday. You can tweet at us. He is at Brad Kellner. I am at Courtesy Wave. Zach is at Soccer Is a Sport, even though soccer is not a sport. Specs text line 337-3776. If you'd like to participate in our version of the Blitz. We only do it on Fridays at 12:50 or so. Call 447-3776. Also, we're getting into the video Blitz. So if you have videos that you've taken this week that you want us to check out, please tweet. You can just tweet the video out with the hashtag, hashtag video Blitz, and we'll make sure to give those a watching as well. Coming up next, we hear what BK thought about the classic movie Hoosiers, as well as participate in the schvitz. You're listening to Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn. Final segment from the 11 o'clock hour on Midday with Trey and BK. This is music from the movie Hoosiers. BK, we talked about it yesterday. Kevin and I did, as he was sitting in the chair for you as you were recovering from your illness. It still has its grip on your brain, but you're well enough to play hurt today, at least. We appreciate that. And what are your thoughts on having viewed the 1986 classic basketball film Hoosiers for the first time?
Yeah, well, first of all, nice job holding down the fort yesterday. Big thanks to KD. But that interview with Angelo Pizzo, which y'all reheard in the 10 o'clock hour, and you can also check out on our podcast page, hornfm.com. A little shameless plug right there. Great interview. Great review. I loved it. And I was a big fan of the movie, Trey. I really, really enjoyed it. A great underdog story. Actually, didn't know it was based on a true story until I listened to that conversation with you and Angelo yesterday. So pretty cool, and man, just the small town vibe of a real small city in Indiana that cares so much about its high school basketball team. There's, what, 50, 60 people in the entire school, and the heroic story. And I heard people compare it to like a 1A team beating a 6A football team in a state championship game. Just crazy heroics. And, you know, so many times, Trey, at sporting events over the years, right, whether it's going into the bottom of the ninth inning at a baseball game or last 2 or 3 minutes at an NBA game or, you know, of a football game, whatever, I've seen that Hoosier speech before the regional final, before the state semifinal game that Coach Norman Dale gives, where all the white guys, you know, start doing the little clapping thing at the end. And I knew it was from Hoosiers, but I didn't know, you know, any other things about that. So I'll be honest, when I saw that scene, I rewinded it like 8 times just to listen to that really inspiring speech from Norman Dale, where he said, you know, as long as you guys play your best, give it all out there, then it doesn't matter to me if you win or lose. Kind of a feel-good deal, but I'm a, you know, win-at-all-cost type guy. But the speech worked, so I'm cool with it. The clapping worked, but man, I enjoyed it. And then the final game with Jimmy Chitwood getting that last shot at the end, after Coach Dale kind of drew up a play for somebody else, then you could see all the players in the huddle, like, kind of like not really saying anything. And he's like, "What?" And Jimmy's like, "Coach, I'll make it. I'll make it." That's all he says, those 3 words. And then
it was a crucial moment.
Yeah, Coach just like, "All right, you got this. The play's for you now." So thought it was cool. You know, just Norm Dale not taking anything, right? This is my team. You got to have the 4 passes before you shoot mentality. The fact that he kicked a player off the team, or I guess two players left the gym before even the first practice, that was cool. And then the whole scene where, you know, in one of the early games when the team was really bad, the Huskers, is that what they were?
The Huskers. And I didn't remember that until I watched it 2 nights ago, the Hickory Huskers.
I just figured they were the Hoosiers too. I mean, I know Indiana, you know, the Hoosier State, whatever, IU, all that stuff, I get it, but I didn't realize they were the Huskers. But yeah, the fact that during one of the early games when they were struggling, one of the players didn't follow the 4-pass-before-shot principle, so Coach put him on the bench. Well, one of the other players fouled out of the game, and they only had a total of 6 players. So, obviously, the simple logic, the likely thing to do is to put that guy back into the game. Coach Dale was like, "Nope, this is my team." He only played with 4, kind of sending a message that this is my team. And, of course, the fact that the whole city pretty much wanted to kick him out. Then Jimmy Chitwood saves the day. He's like, "I'll play if Coach stays. If he doesn't stay, I'm leaving," because of the girl or whatever he was friends with, whatever the main character girl's name is. I didn't figure that out.
Barbara Hershey, Jimmy's sister.
Yes. Oh, that was his sister.
Nice. Jimmy's sister,
I thought they were like a friend or something. Okay. So, yeah, because, you know, her getting up and speaking on behalf of Coach Dale. Thought it was really good, feel-good, inspirational story. And, you know, a lot of basketball in there. A lot of spot-up shooting, a lot of white boys on the floor. I didn't think we saw any brothers until the final championship game.
You heard Pizzo yesterday, because I asked if Jimmy Chitwood was a really good player, because there were a couple scenes where it's him being filmed shooting the basketball,
right,
and he's making shot
shot. Yeah.
And Angelo said he wasn't a great dribbler, he wasn't great at moving around, but he could catch and shoot, and that's most of what you saw Jimmy doing during gameplay.
I think he missed like 1 shot in practice over the course of the whole movie, and then he missed a couple in game when the whole team was struggling, but for the most part, that dude was automatic. And yeah, it was an interesting conversation to hear from Angelo about the deleted scenes, you know, that half an hour or so of the movie was cut out because of just trying to meet people's regulations. Not because the people in the theater didn't like it, the test groups didn't like it, but because the movie was seen as too long. I thought it was great. And then hearing the story you talked about yesterday with you know, Pizzo skipping the Oscars or whatever the Academy Awards are,
is that
to watch IU in the national championship game.
It paid off. They beat Syracuse in 1987.
Yeah, tip of the cap. I mean, if one of my favorite teams is in a national championship or Super Bowl, whatever, there's not one thing in the entire world that I'm missing that for. So, very cool story to hear guys in Hollywood who, you know, stereotypically aren't the biggest of sports fans and stuff like that, deciding to miss out for a national championship game. And Angelo's made some, or written some, incredible movies. The My All American one, of course, Rudy, which is something we'll get to because I haven't seen that yet. But all these are legendary movies. What, For the Love of the Game? That's also him. So
Nope.
What's the other one called?
I think it's called The Greatest Game of Their Lives.
Yeah, see, that's why I should stay in my lane.
It's a soccer movie.
I don't know what I'm talking about there.
You also stay in your lane.
Yeah, thanks, Lamar.
And he also came up with the story concept. I'm forgetting the name of the movie right now. It's based on Vinny Pazienza and a car wreck he got in before he came back to be a successful boxer. It was a movie from last year. He didn't write that entire script, but he came up with the story that the script was based around, too. So, all right, let's get to the Schvitz here. Fill up the phone lines right now. There's still a few openings. 447-3776. Let's go ahead and fire off the Schvitz, though.
It's a shanda and a hopper. Fair dust the leg and the table. It's by the cup and dead. Baruch atah, the knife.
The Schvitz.
Oh, man. All right, we gotta sell this a little bit. Last time we did this, we kind of explained what the schvitz was, and people started calling in. So we don't have a whole lot of callers right now. But this is about you. If you don't want to do this, we'll talk some more sports or some more Fleshlight, which I know some of you love so much.
Some of
but,
you hate.
447-3776, our Friday version of the Blitz. Call us, whatever you want to talk about. We'll get you on and off quick. And we got a couple minutes of the segment, couple of callers, so let's hit it. First, Schvitzer, you're up.
So four-fifths of the rotation is on the scrap heap, and the Astros are still the best team in baseball. It's not even close. And as for your smart-ass comment about me being a fan from 2015 last time, I'll have you know I cut my teeth on Bob Watson, Cesar Cedeno, Enos Cabell, Teo Cruz, and the legendary...
All right, shut up. It's the schvitz. Don't get into like a long sports debate. Congrats to your Astros for being good for the first time in ever. Enjoy it. Act like you've been there before. Calm yourself. I'm assuming he's calling you out.
Calling me out.
Did you get into an argument about Astro bandwagoning fans or something?
I think he's calling you out for saying, welcome to the team circa 2015 from a couple days ago.
Sorry, guys. Sorry you had your feelings hurt.
Houston sports fans love putting the cart in front of the horse. There's still a long way to go in this season, much less the postseason.
They are fun to watch, and yes, they're the best team in baseball. I don't know what else you want us to say. All right, next, Schvitzer, you're up.
I find it ironic, even though I'm 20 years older than BK, that I have seen more movies than him.
Oh, Blind Sean, that's a good point.
Well played, Blind Sean. Well played. You actually might be right, I'll be honest. Next, Schvitzer, you're up.
Damn!
Oh, was that a schvitz right there, or was that a drop that you played? All right, next, Schvitzer.
Hoosiers had jump-shooting players. They didn't have a one-handed jump shot until the 70s.
Ooh. Interesting. That sounded like Rick Epstein. That sounded a little Rick Epstein.
A one-handed jump shot?
Do they have one-handed shots in the movie Hoosiers?
I don't remember that.
I guess guys were normally two-handed. Well, the movie was made in the 80s.
What the hell are you talking about? That's all basketball was before guys started dunking. Especially a team of all white guys. You know they can't get all the way up to the rim. They're having to jump shoot.
All right, we've got one more. Lash Fitzer, you're up.
TCU's going to beat Florida tonight in the World Series. They're going to win it all. Yeah, go Frogs.
Well, who would have thought when TCU was allowed into the Big 12 that they would be the pride of the conference year in and year out in most of the major sports? Maybe not basketball, but
they had that one really good year of football where you could argue they were snubbed out of the playoff. But besides that, now they've crushed Texas, so I can't talk any trash as a Texas fan. But they're a baseball school. What, five College World Series now under Schlossnagel?
Yeah.
They do have to beat Florida twice. Florida only has to beat them once. They have to beat Florida twice to get to that best 2 of 3 championship series. But pretty good run for TCU, sans Luke and Baker, who's without a doubt their best hitter. All right, there's the schvitz. Not bad. You guys did all right. Some guy was a little angry at us, but that's all right. That's what the show is for. We want all feedback. And coming up next, we'll talk to our man Patrick Hruby.
Hruby,
we think. We'll figure out how to pronounce his name. But he is a Vice Sports, a very interesting article and multiple interesting articles about pay for play in college sports. And he has the recent article called "The Plot to Disrupt the NCAA with a Pay for Play HBCU Basketball League." I know a lot of you guys have hot takes on that sort of subject, so we'll talk to Patrick about that on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Midday with Trey and BK right here on the Horn.